Welcome everybody to this tutorial on hearing, which is a digest of the study group whose recording broke, unfortunately, due to technical difficulties. This study group or tutorial is going to cover hearing and its quirks, its defects, its imperfections. It's going to cover specifically volume and frequency and some psychoacoustic phenomena, which is going to be important for you to know whatever applications you choose to go forward with in the audio field. So we're going to start with a discussion of volume. Sound waves are vibrating air molecules. They vibrate at a certain pressure. Volume is, or amplitude, is measured in decibels. What are decibels? They are not directly a measurement of sound pressure. Pressure is measured in pascals. So what a decibel is it is a ratio of air pressures. The pressure of the sound that you want to know the volume of, divided by a reference value. And this reference value is standard air pressure. When you're in a room with just the weight of still air on you and no sound to be heard. Now, this gets quite complicated in terms of maths, but there are certain key takeaways which I will summarize at the end of this part. The ratio isn't linear. It's not that for a certain increase in air pressure, if you increase air pressure by this amount, decibels will increase by this amount, and if you increase air pressure by the same amount again, you'll increase it by the same number of decibels. The ratio is logarithmic. Decibels are a logarithmic scale. And this is because a logarithmic scale is used to simply represent a wide, very wide range of values, ranging from the very small to the very large. Think, if you were going to plot a graph displaying the heights of everything in centimeters, right down from the smallest amoeba to the tallest mountain, or even maybe the circumference of this planet, and you wanted to fit all that onto an A4 sheet of paper, there wouldn't be room to represent all those different values, so you would have to use a logarithmic scale. It might go 1 meter, 2 meters, 4 meters, 8 meters, 16 meters, written along the bottom of your graph, for example. And decibels work the same way. The range of auditory perception in terms of volume for a human is about 120 or 130 decibels, ranging from standard air pressure, which is no sound at all, to the threshold of pain, when it really starts to hurt, when you are damaging your ears. And this encompasses a huge range of air pressures, so decibels make all that more compact, more efficient, and more workable. The log we use for the decibel ratio in audio is log base 20. For electrical power, when we're measuring decibels, for any electricians among you, it's log base 10. So the formula for calculating a given number of decibels for a source that you want to know the volume of is log base 20, sound pressure level of the thing that you want to know the volume of, divided by your reference, 0.02 millipascals. And it's important, when you want to know the volume of something, to include your distance away from it. It's no good saying, how loud is a jackhammer? Oh, it's 110 decibels. Sound decreases over distance, so it's not going to be 110 decibels everywhere. There's a siren near me that I always like to talk about, and is very useful for this explanation. At 1 meter, it's rated as having a volume of 139 decibels. At 20 meters away, it has a volume of 109 decibels, and so on. It decreases. So you need to know the distance away from the sound source that these decibel measurements were taken. The important takeaway to gain from this is that if you want to double something's volume, you don't multiply the number of decibels by 2, you increase the number of decibels by 6. So a 30 dB whisper is over half as quiet as a 40 dB idling motor, and so on and so on. Likewise, if you want to halve the volume of something, you reduce its volume by 6 dB. And that's how it works. That's why, in various places, the threshold of safe exposure in terms of volume and hearing damage is 85 decibels, and for every 5 decibels above that, roughly, some people say 3, I always err on the side of caution, be as conservative as makes sense and you feel comfortable with. For every 5 decibels above that, then the safe exposure time halves. So you can be exposed to 85 decibels of noise for 8 hours, and therefore 90 decibels for 4 hours, 95 for 2 hours, and so on. So you can see that the exposure time drops off very rapidly, and 120 decibels, which is the estimated volume of being sat in the front row of a rock concert, you can work out for yourselves how long a time you can be exposed to that safely. It's not very long at all, so I would advocate wearing earplugs at all times. Someone at the study group asked whether earplugs vary in quality and where you should be getting good quality earplugs from. The usual disclaimers apply. I am not an audiologist. I am not a medical practitioner of any kind with any medical qualifications, so ask your audiologist where to get the best quality earplugs. I have read that audiologists can tailor earplugs to suit your ear canals. I believe this would be quite expensive, but I don't know, so investigate it, and it may vary from country to country, of course. Attenuate all frequencies by the same value. You can have earplugs that go interior, and you can buy these from the drugstore, or you can get them fitted by an audiologist. As I say, they will vary in quality. And you can also get ear muffs that go over your ear. If you use both in conjunction, I've seen estimates that say that would provide a total attenuation of 54 dB. So let's consider a firework. A firework, the loudest fireworks, can have decibels of 150 dB. If you were to wear earplugs and ear muffs in their proximity, you would attenuate that volume to 96 dB. You still shouldn't be exposed to that level of noise for too long. You should still be aware that that is a dangerous level of noise, and you probably shouldn't expose yourself to it routinely. So that's decibels. That's sound pressure level, SPL, decibels in terms of sound pressure level. But what about in terms of a digital editor when you're manipulating audio? Because the loudest you can be in a digital system is 0 dB. How does that work? We're talking about a slightly different kind of decibels. This is 0 dB FS, where FS stands for full scale. So if you increase something up to 0 dB FS, it's as loud as it can go, trying to push it beyond that point, and you will get clipping, which is a nasty, enharmonic, harsh type of digital distortion, which we want to avoid at all costs, almost all of the time. So all decibel values other than that are expressed as negative values. So if a sound source is registering on the meters of your sound editor or your digital audio workstation as minus 6 dB, for example, that means it's 6 dB below 0 dB FS. It means it's half as loud as the loudest it possibly could be. So everything you're going to be dealing with that is safe and stable and working in a digital system in terms of volume is going to be a negative value. A lot of people recommend that you set your levels for recording at minus 18 dB. That is to say that your meters shouldn't go higher than minus 18 on average, so that if someone slams a door or speaks extra loud, you'll have enough what's called headroom to accommodate those louder sounds without clipping. So you've left yourself a safety margin of 18 decibels. That is what's called recording in the yellow, the red being the place right close to or at 0 dB FS. So that's decibels. Now we move on to frequency. We've learnt that the dynamic range, or the safe auditory range of human hearing, is 0 to 130 dB approximately. And incidentally, the louder you listen to sounds, so if you listen to sounds right up 120, 130 decibels, it becomes much more difficult to distinguish fine detail from those sounds. So you need to find a compromise between listening to quiet, and remember that we talked in the first lecture about sound on how if you listen too quietly, you can't hear the bass and the treble as well. So you need to listen at a volume where you can hear the whole frequency spectrum, but not so loudly that you are risking your ears, and not so loudly that you can't make out the fine detail, because the devil is in the detail, and that's what's going to make a good mix, your ability to manipulate those fine details. But what about frequency? The frequency response of the human ear is optimistically estimated at a range from 20 Hz to 20,000 Hz. Now, what does this mean? Frequency, remember our swing analogy, is the number of times a sound wave cycles per second, does a full cycle from like point to like point. Picture a wave on a graph going up and down, so from peak to peak, trough to trough, that is one cycle. How many times does it do that per second? That's its frequency. Remember the person on the swing being pushed backwards and forwards? How many times does that person swing back and forth per second? That's the frequency. The person on the swing being like those air molecules being shoved back and forth by the energy emitted by whatever's producing the sound. So 20 Hz is a very low sound. 20,000 Hz is a very high sound. Now, this means that frequency equates to pitch, another logarithmic scale. This is a 440 Hz tone, an A, if you want to talk about musical equivalents. Now, what happens if we change the pitch of this tone to 880 Hz? What we've done is we've increased that tone by an octave. So the frequency scale is also logarithmic. Double your frequency, you increase something by an octave. Pitch is the manageable way in which we represent a wide range of frequency. 20 Hz to 20,000 Hz, even assuming that people who had understood new music notation back then had known it, that's a huge range of values and far too precise range of values for musicians to cope with. It's far easier to deal in tones and semitones or steps and half steps. It's far easier to deal in octaves. So the gap, as I'm sure you can appreciate, is much greater between 20 and 40 Hz than it is between 10 and 20,000 Hz. Now, this is important for all kinds of things. It's important for filters, for equalization, because filters, as we've seen, are not precise. There's a slope to a filter, and that slope is measured in octaves. So if you want to filter everything above 309 Hz, you want everything above 309 Hz to go away. It's not going to be 309 Hz plays fine, 310 Hz is completely gone. There's going to be a slope, and that slope is going to attenuate so many decibels per octave. And how many octaves you allow that slope to be wide is going to make a difference to your sound, and is going to have a different effect on your sound depending on where the cutoff is for that filter. So if you set your filter at 10,000 Hz and you have a 0.5 octave slope, that looks very different and affects much more of your spectrum than if you want to cut everything off your signal below 20 Hz and you have a 0.5 octave slope. So octaves are important. The logarithmic nature of frequency, where if you double the frequency you increase by one octave, is important to remember. So remember that, and remember if you increase something by 6 dB you double its volume, if you reduce it by 6 dB you half its volume. Similarly, if you increase or decrease by 3 dB you are raising or lowering the volume of your sound by a quarter. So frequency essentially does equate to pitch, at least in terms of fundamentals. Remember that a fundamental tone is the first tone in a harmonic series, and the harmonics above that give the sound its character. It's what makes a violin sound different to a trumpet, sound different to a clarinet, and so on. So we're going to move on now, and we're going to cover a couple of the psychoacoustic phenomena that your ears are prone to. That what this is how does your brain interpret sound? How do we hear sound? And there's a few pitfalls to this. So listen to these pairs of sounds and try and decide which is the louder of the two sounds in each pair. And here's the second pair. And here's the third pair. And here's the fourth pair. So, which out of all those pairs, which sound in each pair did you think was loudest? they were all the same. They were all the same volume. They all show up on the meters as the same volume. They're all output the same volume in the synthesizer engines. Now, this is another way of saying what we basically said in the first lecture, i.e. that the frequency response of the human ear is non-linear. We hear bass frequencies and treble frequencies, so those at the very lowest end and the very highest end of our auditory frequency response, more quietly than we hear things in the middle. The human ear is most sensitive around 4 kilohertz, that's 4,000 hertz. So two ways of saying the same thing. Our sensitivity to other frequency ranges is much less. This was discovered by Fletcher and Munson in 1933. This is why we perceive different parts of the frequency spectrum as being louder or quieter. And this, you can use this to your advantage in mixing, and it's worth bearing in mind in mixing for all kinds of reasons, because you can change someone's perspective. You can bring something forward in the mix by turning down the mids and turning up the highs and lows, or you can put something further back in the mids by turning down the highs and lows and just allowing the mids to come through, which is exactly what would happen if you turn something down, as we demonstrated. So you give the illusion of it being quieter. It sits further back in the mix in terms of its predominance. So now we know that. Listen to this final pair of sounds and see if you can tell which is louder. The first sound was louder in that pair. If you guessed that, maybe you would still be surprised to learn that it was a full 11 decibels louder. That means it was 4 times louder than the second sound, the longer, more piercing tone. Now this raises some other points about the way we hear things. Very, very short sounds sound quieter than longer sounds. There was another short whoosh in one of the pairs we showed you earlier. They sound quieter than longer sounds. And there's another thing. You'll have noticed that some of those sounds faded up and faded down. They still had the same peak amplitude. That is to say, they reached the same volume, but for a far, far shorter time. Our ears, what they tend to do is to take an average, our ears and our brains, take an average of sound, and things that last longer sound louder sometimes. This is called temporal summation. And this is important because, you know, you listen to some fireworks and things. The loudest part of a fireworks discharge is very, very small, and you can tell this if you take a recorder, and without any processing at all, you try and record some fireworks, and you try and do it without clipping, you'll have to turn your recording level way, 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 way down. And the fireworks lose all their character. I've done this. In fact, I have a recording of it, which I will put up as a clip attached to this tutorial. The fireworks lose all their characteristics. They don't sound any good. They just sound like clicks. Because the loudest part, the part that's so much louder than everything else, the part that's making your equipment clip, is so short. But it doesn't sound like that to us, because our ears take an average. The RMS value, that's root mean squared, which is a kind of averaging of the sound over time. So that's the first thing to bear in mind about our hearing. Shorter, loud sounds sound quieter than they actually are. There's also something else to bear in mind, and I can't demonstrate this, unfortunately. Our ears protect themselves in a number of ways. With earwax, as we've discussed, from invading foreign bodies like dust and so on, and fingers and Q-tips that, you know, shouldn't be messing around in there too much. But they also protect themselves by a muscular action. As soon as a loud sound kicks in, these muscles contract and close off our ears to a certain extent. So when a sound kicks in, there will be an initial attack portion that sounds very loud to us, and then the sound will get slightly quieter as the muscular action of our ears close them. So you can simulate, and I don't know how to do this, but you can simulate this action with various processes in your mix and make things sound louder than they actually are. Your ears will think that they're loud because they're used to loud sounds producing that effect. So that's another way that Arias work to protect themselves, but it's a way that Arias colour the way that we hear the world. What we hear isn't actually the sound that is produced, it's altered by the hearing system itself. Here's another thing, a little psychoacoustic trick to show you. Here we have two guitar tracks. They're both the same. They're exact copies of one another, and they sound like this. Now, if we pan one all the way to the left, that means move it all the way to the left in the stereo image, and pan this one all the way to the right, the second track, then it'll sound like this. It sounds absolutely the same, because the same volume of sound is hitting our right ear as is hitting our left ear, and the sound, the nature of the sound, the content is exactly the same, so it still sounds like it's coming out of the center. But what if we shifted one of these tracks forward a little bit? Let's shift it forward 100 milliseconds, and we'll paste the contents of that track there, and now the result sounds like this. We've produced a delay, an echo, so the sound occurs first in the left ear and then in the right ear. Let's move the second copy back a little bit. Let's move it so that it is only 50 milliseconds ahead of the other one. Now it sounds like this. Still a definite echo. You can hear both tracks as being discreetly separate. Let's move it back so that they are 15 milliseconds apart, and paste the contents of the track there. Now, we can't hear that there are two separate sounds going on, but the stereo image has changed. We have a nice wide sound, but we can't hear that it's made up of two separate sounds. The time interval between the two instances is too short. Let's try this, move it back even further. Let's move it back to 10 milliseconds. See, I like that. I think that's quite nice. Let's move it back even further. Let's move them so that they're only 1 millisecond apart. Now it sounds like this. See, that sounds a bit strange. I don't like that as much. I prefer it. We've kind of lost our stereo width. This is an effect called the Haas effect, named after the man who discovered it, Haas. And he discovered that if sounds were played less than 20 to 30 milliseconds apart, even if you increased the copy following the original by as much as 12 dB in some cases, you wouldn't be able to hear that there are two separate sounds. They would sound like one sound, and if they were panned hard left and hard right, as we've done, they would produce a stereo image sounding like the same sound, but with a really wide stereo impact. There can be problems with this approach. If you try and make this sound that we've created mono, here's what it sounds like in stereo. Let's make it mono now. It doesn't sound as nice because of something called comb filtering. It's the way that these sounds interact with each other. We can make it even worse if we move it such that the second sound is 5 milliseconds ahead of the first. So that's how that works. You have this comb filtering effect where some of the frequencies are accentuated and nasty things happen. So the Haas effect, it's a very useful mixing trick. It enables you to, as I say, make things sound like they have a really wide stereo image. This is useful for sound effects as well. If you have a mono birdsong sound effect, for example, mono birdsong sound effects aren't really very useful as backgrounds for dramas, etc., because what birdsong sound effect is ever truly mono? So you might want to cheaply emulate stereo by using this effect. It's not foolproof, but with careful application and some other tweaks, it can work to your advantage. Now, I'm going to show you one other thing that's very important. Listen to this sound. Someone doing the vacuuming. As soon as the vacuuming stops, these other sounds appear. I didn't turn them up. I didn't change them in any way. The vacuum simply drowned them out. I can prove this. This is an effect known as masking, where louder sounds will drown out quieter sounds. They'll completely obliterate them. Even if the quieter sounds are well within our ability to hear, it'll completely obliterate them. Similarly, sounds with similar frequency ranges will fight for each other and fight with each other and become blurred, and you won't be able to hear them as well or at all if the sounds have similar frequency ranges and one is louder than the other as well. Then things become really difficult. This is made even more complicated by the fact that sounds may have different fundamental frequencies. You may, for example, have two instruments harmonizing with one another. The fundamental frequencies are different, but some of their harmonic content might be in similar frequency ranges, and therefore masking may occur. And this makes the instruments sound blurry, and it makes a mix sound muddled and confused. Now remember, we talked about octaves. Sounds within a third of an octave of one another will mask each other. Now, as you go up the frequency spectrum, these octaves get bigger, so a wider range of frequencies will mask one another. So if you're in a shower and you're trying to talk to someone, they won't be able to hear your S's, your F's. F's are quiet and S's are quite bright. They have a lot of high frequency content, and so they're very easily masked by other things. If I turn this on again, and I try to talk, you can hear me because I am louder than the vacuum, but am I as clear? I can hear myself back in my headphones, I sound clearer to myself now that the vacuum has stopped. And this is, as we said, one of the ways that you can tell that perhaps you are having a hearing problem is your ability to distinguish sounds that are masking each other decreases with age because of the reduced ability of the ear to respond to certain frequencies and separate sounds out from one another. So that's masking. And avoiding masking issues is really one of the cornerstones of mixing. You want to produce a hit song, you want to be like Queen and have millions of vocal tracks and umpteen instrumental parts, you're going to have to make it such that all these instruments have their own space, that they don't mask each other, that one isn't much louder than the other so it's drowning everything else out, that they don't occupy similar frequency ranges. And a good music arranger will help you with this, but mixing is the art of ensuring that there isn't too much masking, that everything has its space, everything sticks out to the extent that it's meant to. Most important instruments first, and then everything else backing it up. But you should still be able to hear everything. So just to summarize what we've learned. Decibels. A decibel is a ratio of quantities rather than a quantity itself. Decibels in editing, in audio systems, are negative values until you reach 0 dBFS, which is the full volume for a digital system. And it's a relative value. Obviously, if you play 0dBFS quietly, it will be quiet. If you play 0dBFS loudly, it will be loud. So don't think just because you've turned things down to minus 20, minus 30 dB on your digital audio application that you're listening to things at safe levels, because it all depends on how things output from your speakers. You could have something at minus 80 dB, but if you have really good amplifiers and you have them up too loud, then it's still going to be too loud for you. Double something's volume by increasing it by 6 decibels. Halve it by decreasing it by 6 decibels. If you double something's frequency, you raise it by an octave. Our hearing is non-linear. We hear bass and treble frequencies less well than we do mid-frequencies. Our brains are unable to separate signals that are identical, that follow too closely to one another. We can use this to our advantage with the Haas effect. Our brains perceive very short sounds as quieter than longer sounds. And this can be used to our advantage as well, but it's something to bear in mind when you have headphones on and you turn a computer on or a piece of equipment on and there's that great pop. That is actually probably louder than you think it is, and you should probably not have that too close to your ears. And masking, the fight between similar frequency ranges, or the dominance of loud sounds over quiet sounds that can completely obliterate the quieter sounds. It's why you feel like your hearing is more acute at night, and you hear things that you wouldn't otherwise notice, creaking floorboards and walls and so on, because there's fewer sounds to obscure them. So masking, the Haas effect, other psychoacoustic phenomena, feel free to look them up in your own time. Our ears are very quirky, strange things, and they hear things in strange ways, and if you master the magic of sound, you can become an illusionist and pull all kinds of tricks on your listener that make you think you have more in your audio content than you actually do. Hope you've enjoyed this tutorial. If you have any questions, please email submit-audio@ciscovision.org.